Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, 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 my wonderful audience. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And of course, wherever you are in the world, you may not know where this is coming from. It's coming from PRN.fm, www.prn.fm. And an organization I am so glad to be associated with. And you can call into this show. You can call into it. You can be not just a member of the wonderful audience. You can be a guest by calling in. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we do enjoy getting callers. Remember also, I check it all the time, that you can actually email me live, not live, but you can email me and I'm going to read it at breganlive@hotmail.com. This is a separate email from any of my other emails. This is much better than the ones that are on my website. This is because you're listening to my radio show and want to talk to me about it. breganlive@hotmail.com. And don't forget also on the website, if I do talk about news, we do have a breaking news every single day that goes up with interesting on the website, interesting items that I will refer to on occasion here, maybe more than I've been doing. And we have a searchable archive on Bregan.com, www.bregan.com. You can find the searchable archive for the show. So we are cooking. I'm cooking. My life is going very, very well. Lots of creativity, lots of interesting legal cases, lots of interesting writing, a new book that's in the making. Things are going well here. I hope they're going well with you. And I'd like to help. I'd like to help with their going well with you. And today, my guest is a dear and much loved friend, Pam Popper, PhD, the nutritionist who runs the Wellness Forum Health and who is running the conference that I'm co-sponsoring with her. That's coming up here in November now, or toward the end of November. Well, not toward the end. Pam Popper, what are the dates for the conference?
November 9 through 11, which is just around the corner. Hard to believe, right?
Oh, God. I better get my act together and get ready to go.
Well, we're ready for you to be here. We are ready.
Oh, gosh. I think, you know, Pam and I were talking today about what do we want to talk about. And actually, Pam's topic is one that is so much on my mind right now. She said, let's talk about principled living. Never mind nutrition. We can mention my courses. We can mention the conference. But let's talk about principled living. Because, folks, that is the secret to life. It is principled living. Sir, madam, doctor, hi.
Take over. Yeah, so I was so inspired. First of all, I read your book, The Heart of Being Helpful, and you talk about principled living in your book. And when we were here filming for your course, you brought up principled living a couple of times. And I know it's very important, and it really resonates with me. And I got to thinking about what principled living means, not just in the pursuit of happiness, because it is the path to happiness and contentment and all the things that we want in life, but it has a lot to do with the way that we take care of our bodies. And so the gist of what I ended up writing this morning when I was all inspired about it, and this thought came into my head, was I've always found that when people are unhappy, one of the reasons that they are unhappy or discontented is there's a disconnect between what their fundamental rules and beliefs are and their behavior. And so how that manifests in the office is, you know, I'll ask people how important and they'll oh my gosh, it's very important. I mean, I don't really have anybody coming here who says, oh, well, you know, I don't really care so much. I mean, I came in basically to keep you company this afternoon. They care. Okay, so you say that your health is important, but, and I don't quite put it this way when I'm talking with somebody, but just to kind of frame the discussion, I'm looking at a medical history and a dietary journal and an exercise pattern or lack thereof that is completely inconsistent with the statement, my health is really important to me. And so part of principled living is that if your belief and your rules, your internal principles are health is important, and there are reasons for the fact that it's important, but you're behaving in an entirely different way, this disconnect between the behavior and the principles that you've set forth in your life is a major source of misery. And so we bring those things into alignment, and life gets better. So I wrote down my own principles of life as they pertain to health and why I think I do what I do, what I get out of doing the things that I do in the way that I do them. And I gave everybody an invitation at the end of my article to do the same thing, to sit down and reflect about where health fits into your life and then to look at your behavior and what you write down and see the disconnect. And part of principled living is making your behavior in alignment with the rest of everything. And so I hope I inspire some people to look at this, because it's something that's afflicting most people in this country right now.
So where does psychology fit into this? You're basically a nutritionist. You got a hold of me to bring in the mental health component, but I'm sure you've been thinking about it your whole life. Mm-hmm. Where does psychology come together with principled living? It's easy to see with nutrition. It's easy to see with exercise. We can see that we're failing. What sort of principles do you live by, Pam, that make your life go?
I think that when you move outside of my health is a priority, but I'm not behaving as if it is, and you fix that, and you eat well, and you exercise, then it gets to what is it that I'm doing in my life? I think humans need a purpose, and the most miserable time in my life that I remember is when I was walking around without purpose, just sort of existing. You know, I've always been pretty good at having a job. I learned that good work ethic from my European family. But there's a difference in just having a job and going through the motions of doing things and then getting up in the morning, on the other hand, and saying, I know why I'm here on this earth, and I'm here to make a difference in a positive way, and here is the way in which I'm going to go about doing it. So I think the first thing is you have to have a purpose, and if you don't have one, you have to start seeking one, so that you have a reason for living. I think the other thing is people feel good, I know I do, when you're making a contribution to something. And it doesn't have to be, you know, some people make ginormous contributions that change the world in profound ways. You do that. And that's one of the things I love and admire about you. But we can all influence the people around us in a positive way. I mean, even the behavior, the health behaviors, you inspire and teach other people and lead by example and show other people that it's possible to have a great life and practice healthy behaviors. So I think having purpose, I think leading by example, contributing, being a person of your word, being reliable, excuse me, these are the types of things that bring people that are parts of principled living. Being the kind of person that you wish everybody else was. Have you ever noticed that when we sit around and complain about other people, a lot of times the things we're complaining about are the things that are wrong with us? And so if you're looking at everybody else saying, gosh, I wish this person didn't do this or would do that, it's probably a fair guess that you could probably stop doing this and start doing that and become a better person as a result of it.
I think that's 100% true. I just think it's an absolutely true thing. And I think that purpose is just overwhelmingly important. And some people are born with a lot of purpose, or at least their very early environment gives them some stimulation or encouragement, and they just always have purposes, you know, that they're not fixing up something, they're tearing something down, or they're out there, you know, in the garden doing something, or they're running around wanting to learn something new. And then gradually, often in their very, very early years, they develop some purposes that they really care about, that make sense. I mean, I'm always struck by Ginger, my wife Ginger, who, you know, as a very young child, got involved with reforming the dilapidated, awful, dog pound sort of thing they had in her hometown, and how she eventually grew up into her teens and made it an issue of a mayoralty campaign and got a new mayor in. I mean, so some people just get going early. I remember very early feeling one of my purposes would be that when I grow up, I'm going to tell people how hard childhood is. And I've actually kind of lived, or have lived, to fulfill some of that purpose. Other people, they have to look and they have to grow into it. And they find their purposes later in life. Some people in retirement, I think, find their purposes better than they ever had them. But be on the lookout. You know, is there a voice inside you that's saying, this is what I want to do. This is how I've wanted to live my life. And the purpose can be one that looks very narcissistic on the surface. And maybe because you've been so frustrated, you haven't tried singing, you haven't tried painting, you haven't tried public speaking, or other things that are thought of as self-expression. But once a person really becomes immersed in the things that look like they just serve in yourself, whether it's gardening and so you can have the right vegetables or whatever, it ends up becoming something for other people, because you begin to realize that music ultimately is for all of us. And if we have that gift, which I do not, we share it with others. And so is our artwork, and so is our gardening, because we're gonna cook for other people. We're gonna bring health into the lives of other people. So never forget that purposes can be so broad: raising children, having a foster child. Many, many people have their purposes through pets and animals. They save animals and they take care of them and find homes for them. School teachers can have enormous purpose. My mother-in-law, my mom Jean, after she was near finished raising her kids, went to college and became a teacher for 20 years, and then third grade, and ended up retiring. Purposes. And she still teaches. She likes teaching me. I would love to just keep thinking about ways to talk about it, to encourage all of you listening. And of course, if you're listening to me talking and Pam talking, then you've got some alignment with our purposes. You've got some alignment with wanting to make the world a better place. You've got some alignment with a feeling that psychiatric reform is very, very important. Hopefully, you also believe in our own self-development as individuals and loving and caring for other individuals. So you've got some shared values here. So now you're in something infinite. I mean, anybody listening to me talk right now who has not just fallen into a rabbit hole and discovered they're on PRNFM with somebody named Peter Bragan, I mean, almost everybody here is here by purpose, then you have unlimited purposes. And of course, we see that in the emails that I get on our dedicated email for the show, breganlive@hotmail.com. You see it in the callers who call in here. What I don't see as much as I would love to from everyone is make your own purposes about all of this. One person having an effect can grow and grow that effect. It's just astonishing what a dedicated human being can accomplish. So purposes, they're just so important. Pam, I'm glad you brought that up as the first thing. And folks, call in 888-874-4888, and we'll be taking calls. We'll talk about purposes or anything else that seems remotely related to the day's work. Go ahead.
Well, another thing I wanted to say, and this is something that I've seen afflict people, and I just had this conversation with a friend not too long ago, is that you mentioned that you had some inspiration as a child. You began to feel inspired about something, and your wife, who was a wise person in grade school and had a lot of inspiration. And so, and I know people like that. I'm a person who wandered around for a long time without any inspiration and then found some, thankfully, which is why I think my life is spectacular now, as I found some. But I was speaking with somebody who said, well, you found something that you're passionate about, and so-and-so has something they're passionate about. Me, I started out to do something else, and then just something else came along, and I still haven't found something. And this is a person who's really spectacularly successful at what he does, and seems to feel that because it wasn't some inspiration that started when he was a teenager, that it doesn't count. And so my mother, who I've had, God knows, so many conflicts with, but she did have some wonderful things that she taught me in spite of all that, she used to tell me all the time, you need to learn to bloom where you're planted. And another statement I remember hearing a lot when I was growing up is, man plans and God laughs, all right? So sometimes life takes twists and turns, and you don't always end up exactly where you think you're going to end up, or you don't know. You don't know even what you're looking for. So you sometimes have to say, well, I don't know what I'm looking for, and I'm not feeling particularly inspired at this moment, but I think I need to just pay attention to what's going on around me and look at the signs that I'm seeing. Because it could be that the universe or God, or people refer to it as different things, is trying to tell me something. And if I would just be just a little quiet and listen, I could find out that I belong here, that I can contribute here. This is the thing, even though I didn't go looking for it. It's the thing that landed in my lap that could be it. And so I see a lot of discontented people because they backed into something instead of chasing it, and they think that somehow that cheated them of something. And I backed into all of this. I wasn't chasing this. And I remember thinking, because I was pretty disappointed about something when this all started, my mother's statement about bloom where you're planted, and I thought, well, I don't have anything better on my mind right now, so maybe I just will pursue this and see what happened, and look what happened, right? So I think that we have to be prepared, if we're looking for a spectacular life, to deal with the unexpected, to take advantage of the unanticipated things that come our way, to the fact that our plan may not be as good as the one that ended up happening instead of. Maybe that was better after all. And being open-minded to that leads to a lot more happiness than being fixated on a particular thing or a way that you thought things were supposed to happen that causes infinite frustration.
Yeah, I think purposes are everywhere. I think if you think about it, it would probably be difficult to walk down a street with other people doing activities past a couple of stores without thinking of all the purposes that one could have. There are people in need everywhere. There are interesting things everywhere. Human beings are so inherently creative. I was just reading for the umpteenth time about some of these caves, that developed between 30,000 BC and 10,000 BC, where human beings climb down narrow, treacherous passages, taking an hour or more, going deep into caves, carrying the most primitive and I'm sure fragile lighting systems to just get down to where all their paintings were and to look at the paintings and do whatever they did in the way of rituals in these rooms full of paintings and then to do their paintings. I mean, we human beings, we have thrived on purposes, spiritual and physical and nutritional, and then there's love, and to be able to take joy, that's my definition of love, a joyful awareness, be able to be joyfully aware of another person, a place that you tend to. I've seen people, well, we all know people love their cars. They love their musical instruments. They love their kitchens. They love their back porches. They love the lake they visit. I mean, to just engage in a loving way with the world around you is a grand purpose in itself. And you're one of God's children too, you know, every one of you. So I mean, you have a right to be happy and to be developing your life in whatever directions you choose to go. And whether it's tough purposes like Pam and I take on, or whether it's purposes that are just more readily fulfilling, maybe, and encouraging, whatever they are, find your way. What turns you on? What attracts you? What engages you? And engage with it. Don't be afraid to. Don't feel embarrassed about it. There's just so much goodness to be reaped out there in the world. And if you look at the world, as any sensible person does, and you see all the misery, don't let that get you down. That misery is an invitation to take life seriously and to have the purpose of making the world a better place. Once you get engaged, really genuinely engaged in whatever corner of the universe you're in, and helping it be a better place, you will no longer sit around being cynical, angry, and complain and feel like a victim of this dreadful world we live in. The world's always been dreadful. I mean, would you want to be around during Genghis Khan? Would you want to be around during the plague, which went on and on and on? Maybe the Inquisition, maybe a Native American when the invasion took place. Maybe somebody in the Revolutionary War couldn't make up his mind which side he was on or she was on. Would you want to be a slave? My God, there have been slaves forever on this earth, going back to the Bible times, which means even earlier. So yeah, the world has always been this tough place because people have so much difficulty living by principles. And that's what the Ten Commandments was supposed to start us on, the direction of living by principles. But don't get discouraged about it. That would be just the worst thing you could do for yourself. Look at it as opportunity. Look, and this is not pie in the sky. This is how Pam and I live. Pam, this is how you live, isn't it? The misery is opportunity.
It's how I learned to live. And a couple things I'll share with you. And I don't know if I've ever told you about this before, but this whole idea of see the opportunity in front of you and take advantage of it, and you don't necessarily know where things are going. You know what I mean? You don't have to know. You just jump in and do something. My dad used to have a great saying when my sister and I were sitting around and doing nothing. He'd go, oh my gosh, girls, do something, even if it's wrong. I mean, it's like, get up and do. You know, you just can't sit and stare at the wall and expect good things to happen in life. And so, you know, when I was in a very bad place financially back in 1988, I mean, I was bankrupt. That's a pretty bad place financially, and a little bit upset and frightened and all that sort of thing. The opportunity in front of me at the time was direct sales. I didn't want to sell anything. I wasn't a salesperson. I didn't know how to sell anything. I thought I couldn't sell anything. But I'll tell you what, if you're motivated enough to make something happen, it's amazing how you can jump into something you don't know anything about and get good at it, because your life depends on it to a certain extent. It's like, I better get busy here. I've got a family to support and the whole nine yards. So anyway, it's not what I wanted to do. It was the thing in front of me. So I thought, well, I'm going to do this. I don't know where it's going to take me, but I am going to do it. And what came out of that was, first of all, as you and I both know, because healthcare is the thing I was supposed to be involved in. This makes my heart sing every day for the things that I do here. But as you know, most people who get into healthcare don't have any business background at all. And they make grievous mistakes because they don't have any business background. Well, the first thing is, boy, did I get a lot of business background before I found the thing that really mattered to me to pursue. And so I look at that, maybe the universe had planned that crisis for me. I call it God. Somebody else might call it the universe. But maybe that financial crisis had to happen so that I would get involved with this company and learn some great business and sales skills and management skills, so that when this came along, this thing that I wanted to do that is now the passion of my life, I would know how to do it. And I look back and I think, maybe that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was that crisis. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't do well in healthcare because they don't have business sense. I have a lot of it. So that's one thing. And then another thing is I remember when I was sort of rudderless and wandering around, much younger. This was 20 years before the bankruptcy. And the local ballet company, I'd always loved dance, and we were just starting a ballet company, and they were looking for volunteers. And I thought, well, I don't have anything to do, so I'll hang out with them and maybe do some volunteering. And I learned how to call people on the phone. I learned how to call people I didn't know. I called you when I didn't know you. I wasn't afraid to do that. That's how I learned to do it, was doing volunteer work for the ballet. And so my point is that when my dad was saying, do something, even if it's wrong, you know, just get up and move and move in some direction. And you don't necessarily know where it's going, and you don't have to know. You just have to know that forward motion gathers momentum. And if you gather momentum, you can get thrust into the thing that you're looking for. But so many people they don't see that there's anything in front of them. Or they don't see the thing they're looking for in front of them, and so they think that there isn't an opportunity. And there is. The world is full of opportunities. It's out there. And it's the reason why people take the worst circumstances you can possibly imagine and end up in spectacular places, and other people who start with every advantage sometimes sit there and never find anything that they're looking for. So I think you find inspiration by just starting to do something and seeing where it takes you. And where it takes you is sometimes pretty amazing. Look where we ended up.
We are going all kinds of places. It's amazing. Folks, Pam and I are doing all kinds of things together. We've got a course that's going to come out sometime, maybe in November, which will be on the heart of being helpful, part one, how to help yourself. And it's going to be at a lower cost than our big fancy how and why to stop taking psychiatric drugs, which is like a tour de force of 25 videos of Peter Breggin and active interaction with Dr. Miskey, who was on my show last week, and Pinar, and we're going to have another one that's got a short consumer course on how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs, and we're just doing a ton of stuff. And if you go to my website, Breggin.com, I have the banner. Get down the banner. Don't go to my courses and stuff at the top. Get down the banner that has the Wellness Forum logo on it, and it goes right to Pam, and to you get a phone number where you can call Pam and find out about the conference. And have you been getting any calls, Pam, off the website, of people calling you, or off the radio show?
Yeah, good.
Is it too much? We get calls all the time.
We already have people registered for the big course that starts in January. That one's for health professionals. You know, you and I have talked about this all the time. Everybody knows how to put people on the drugs, but boy, there sure aren't very many people who know how to take people off of the drugs, and we need more people who know how to do that. So we already have a therapist in France who signed up for the course starting in January. He's wanted to do it for a long time. He's very excited. We have two other practitioners. The other two are from foreign countries, too. So you have a pretty wide reach. You get to a lot of people in a lot of corners
of
the
world. Listen, you don't have to be a professional, though. I mean, if you just want to take the course to know how to help your kids or your family or yourself as a part of your life.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think that the bottom line is the continuing theme, I think, throughout all the things that you're doing, I'm doing, and we're doing together is empowering consumers and empowering practitioners to be better, and a lot of them, to their credit, want to be better at what they do. But empowering consumers, you know, I use this analogy, I teach by analogy, and I must have had this conversation 10 times today before I got on the radio show with you, about learning how to consume health and health information the way that you do everything else. I mean, when people buy houses and cars and blenders and washing machines and retirement accounts and college educations for their kids, they don't just do what salespeople tell them. They ask questions. They check things out. They compare information, and they deliberate, and they look at How does this fit in with my value system and where I'm going in life? I mean, you just don't meet people who say, I don't know how to read a mortgage document. I sure hope I can afford this place. I'll go on ahead and sign it. People read documents that are complicated. They figure it out. And then they get into doctor's offices, psychiatrist offices, I mean, all kinds of healthcare practitioners and who tell them to do something, and they just nod their head and go, okay. And so I think that information empowers people to do better for themselves and to take control of the interaction that they have with the healthcare community, whether it's a psychiatrist or a nurse practitioner, whoever you're dealing with, and to be able to say yes, no, I'll think about it, I need information, you should give me information, check things out before you do things. This is the way we do everything else except healthcare, and that has to change. So I love the idea of the empowered consumer feeling less frightened, more in control, more in control of health and being able to make a better life for himself or herself. I think this is the thing that makes my heart sing every day. I love when people get well, and I love when they tell me stories of taking control of the situation and not being afraid to say to somebody who maybe was perceived as being powerful and intimidating and saying, no, I don't think that's going to work for me. We're going to have to do this differently. And here's my plan, and let me show you some information that might help you understand where I'm coming from. Don't you just love when somebody says that to a doctor? I do. It's like the best ever.
Hey, Pam, do you want to give out your email and or your phone to folks so they can get in touch with you about the conference, about the courses?
Sure.
About nutrition, about your nutritional programs.
Yes, my email is pampopper@msn.com, pampopper@msn.com, and our phone number here at the office is 614-841-7700. We're open 12 hours a day. We're staffed with humans who answer the phone. We try to make it a very personal experience here.
Yeah. In a moment, Pam, I'm going to introduce you to one of my callers, my wonderful audience, who's actually more and more becoming a regular guest. So I'm going to have her on in a minute. But first I wanted to respond to a question that somebody emailed me, which was very, very important, on breganlive@hotmail.com. And this person had been just hanging on the phone to the end and then didn't get on. And that's a really... That's an unfortunate issue, and that's entirely my doing. It's not the staff or the wonderful people who work at PRN.FM. And what happens with me is that I'm not sure until the end often if somebody is going to be able to get on the show, because I'm not sure about the rhythm. I'm not sure about how it's going with the guest. So from now on, you can assume, if you haven't been told not to hang on, that you should hang on. And if I get to the point, this is going to be the key, when I get to the point where I am pretty certain we're just not going to make it, then I'll just announce it right on the air. And so you as a person hanging on the line, you'll hear it right from me. And you can let go. So I'm going to take charge of that. And so keep in mind then that you're okay hanging on, because if I haven't said, you know, that's going to be our last caller, then there's still a chance. Now, obviously, if it gets down to 30 seconds, you know, I forgot to say it. So let me, by the way, I'm enjoying my show more and more, Pam. I'm just getting more and more relaxed on it. And not long from now, I think I'm going to be talking about video as well, like TV sort of thing. That will be a separate production from my home studio as we get it together. So, Pam Popper, I want you to meet Sarah from California. Sarah, are you there?
Hey, how are you both?
Hi, Sarah.
Sarah, introduce yourself to Pam Popper and to the audience. I mean, you're such a regular guest, and you send me such interesting and valuable information by the email, and that you're really becoming a part of the show.
Well,
do you want to say anything
about
yourself to Pam and the audience?
Pam and I have actually exchanged a couple emails about upcoming
class.
Oh, my
God. You're way ahead of me. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I am a certified rehabilitation counselor, and I live out in California, in San Diego. And I was listening to you both talking about purpose-driven life, and you know that's the fifth principle of the recovery model. When you talk to peers in the grassroots movement, the fifth principle is living, finding meaning and purpose in life, and oftentimes that comes through spirituality. So I love that you tie in spirituality into your conversations, because so many people, 75% of the participants, they questions, more than 2,500 people mentioned some form of spirituality in helping them find meaning and purpose. And that was the same for me as well. But I also found that daily in exploring, when I was getting back on track, because I lived for 17 years with acute symptoms of schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type with catatonia. And I was looking for purpose, and I was trying to find purpose outside of my home and outside of, you know, being stuck in my head. And I found that community service was really helped me provide to the community in a way that people actually valued, because they needed my help. And so I volunteered at a food bank. I volunteered at an elementary school. I volunteered at a lot of places, just kind of explore what I was interested in doing and interested in becoming. And I wanted to share a resource with your listeners. Here in America, we have justserve.org, which is an organization that everyone can sign into, and any nonprofit can log in and post their needs, their volunteer needs. And so you can sign in, I think it's actually in Canada and perhaps even in the United Kingdom as well, but you can sign in, log in, give your postal code, and then it will give you organizations that have contacted JustServe who are looking for volunteers. So right now here in my neighborhood within 5 miles, there's like 25 service opportunities. And there are just a variety of different things, everything from painting over graffiti to helping veterans and helping, there's another one for driving elderly people to their doctor's appointments or grocery shopping. There's just a variety of different things. And it's all of these different nonprofits that are just pleading for people to find purpose with them.
That's very, very good information. Very, very good information. Some point would be really, you know, I'm just thinking, Sarah, I think that you and I should be talking about having you on the show as a full-hour guest at some point. Would you be up for that?
You bet I would.
Well, you certainly deserve it. And
I'll
email you back when I've looked ahead and seen what things look like, and suggest a time for you to come on. And it might be really wonderful to have you talk about, I mean, this mouthful of psychiatric diagnoses you just applied to yourself and your own growth and development, and because you sound like a very clear spirit at this point in time and a very strong spirit. And I think it could be enormously worthwhile for you to talk more about it. And you could do that right now. I mean, that would be fine, too, for just a few minutes. But I'd just love to hear myself more about how you've built a life for yourself. Do you have any thoughts right now that you want to share, or should we wait till when we have more time?
Well, I feel bad because you have Dr. Popper on with you. I don't want to take away her time.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. We can take this anywhere we want to.
Yeah, this okay. is... go ahead.
Well, I had my very first psychotic break when I was 23, and I was a student at Brigham Young University. And I was, I had dealt with some anxiety, I dealt with some depression, and I dealt with some, what I didn't understand was symptoms of mania, but I had navigated through that. I had a really strong social support with my family and with my church and with my schools that I'd gone to. And so it hadn't really been an issue for me until I had my first psychotic break. And when that occurred, my world fell apart. I was put on medications, but the medications made things worse. Suddenly, the voices weren't friendly anymore. They were very sinister and evil, and I had constant banter going back and forth, arguing each other, and just a constant running critique of my own behavior. It was just a really bizarre experience. I lived with that for 12 years, acute nastiness, cycling through 37 different combinations of medications. I was very treatment resistant. I was very compliant with treatment, but this treatment just wasn't working, and that's why I cycled through so many different combinations of medications. And then finally in 2008, my doctor sat down with me, and he just had tears in his eyes, and he's like, "Sarah, we have exhausted all of the options on, you know, all of the pharmaceutical options. There's nothing else we can give you. They have not yet invented it. I'm so sorry." And he was crying. And by that time, I'd already had probably 80 ECT treatments, and I was continuing with ECT. And I realized then that I could not depend on him to find my answers. And I had to go out and find people who were living with mental illness, who were doing it right, because I wanted to learn the tricks of the trade. And so I finally found the NAMI peer-to-peer class. I finally found the Recovery Innovations. I think it's called RI International. They have they taught the Wellness Recovery Action Plan class that was developed by Mary Ellen Copeland. And so I began brainstorming with my peers who were living with these illnesses. And the very first time I went to the NAMI family to family class, I had never met anyone living with my symptoms who was not in a group home, not, you know, who had their own job, who wasn't in an institution, who wasn't in an ICU unit, who wasn't in the back of a police car. I'd never met anyone like with my symptoms who was living successfully. And finally, I had someone teaching this class who was employed. She had her own place. She had a boyfriend. And I was like, teach me more. And so I began learning some strategies, or we call them wellness tools. And just as I began learning these wellness tools and actually applying them, little by little, I was able to make course corrections and recognize my symptoms before they became monumental grossness, and be able to kind of fine-tune my journey so that little by little, I was able to circumvent these symptoms without completely derailing my journey. So I was able to get out of the abusive group home. I finally made the decision to quit ECT against medical advice. Best decision ever made. I tried making the decision multiple times, but when they have you sign the consent form when you're in restraints, it's not very easy to quit against medical advice. And then I finished. I moved out of the nasty group home. I found a beautiful, kind woman who let me rent a room from her. I got a part-time job. I had the ECT had erased all of my college education experience, work experience, et cetera, and so I knew I could answer phones, and so that's what I got my job doing. I was answering phones for a tax company, and they recognized something in me, and within 3 weeks, I was promoted to the administrative assistant for the regional manager, and then I went back to graduate school, and now I'm me.
You're a miracle.
That's a wonderful story.
What a strong spirit you are. What a strong person. And what an inspiration. I'm so glad. I want my audience to get to know you better, too. Sarah, have you ever written up your life story in short or long form?
I do have little blogs that I post on my website, which I'm refining. Recently, with the increase of problems with the tardive dyskinesia and the tardive dystonia, we had some really nasty water damage in our apartment, which made me completely toxic. So I was teaching at San Diego State University in the licensed professional clinical counseling track for the rehab counselors, but the building had been flooded and the campus was moldy, and then I got water damage in my house and everything just went to pieces. And so now I live in a home that has really good HEPA filtration, but basically I can't even walk into about 95% of the buildings, because when I do, their HVAC systems either don't release the condensation, or I don't know, there's mold in these buildings in San Diego. And so it triggers this nasty dystonic reaction and even diaphragmatic paralysis. And so basically I live at home. I would try to find contract work, researching from home, and I have a really nice HEPA filtered environment and a sunny backyard.
Sarah, send me some links, and then I do want to go to another guest who's right on point. Send me some just a couple of links to your blogs. Make it easy for me, okay?
Sounds great. I hope you both have a wonderful day. I'm so grateful.
You too. You're a shining light on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. You really are, Sarah. Thank you for being there.
Take care.
Wow. Any thoughts, Pam? Did you want to tell you? Yeah. I'm sure she's still listening. Did you want to say anything to Sarah? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I echo what your feelings are. What a strong spirit, and it goes to some of what we have been talking about it, sometimes in the face of just what seems insurmountable and incredibly long odds, you just start moving in a direction and you gather momentum as you go and you become determined to get someplace. And you know, many things in life don't make sense. In other words, people who are supposed to die from cancer don't. People who are supposed to spend their lives in institutions get out. People who have had terrible things happen to them end up happy. And I think one of the reasons is that someplace inside, they're able to reach deep down inside and find that part of their spirit that wants things to be okay, and then just move in the direction to make it happen. And anybody who's listening to this who is in this situation, miserable for any reason, either because the psychiatric profession has hurt you terribly, or any other healthcare professional, or something else has happened in your life, I think the key is to find some inspiration in that other people who've been in horrific circumstances have come out okay, and you can too. And that's sometimes the beginning, just finding that little piece of inspiration that, you know, many times people don't see much inspiration in the world around them. Now you've heard some. And so now you have to do something. You've got to get up and start moving in the direction of something good and just see where it takes you. So I hope people listening to this heard this story and said, you know what, I can do it too. I can do it, whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Let's go to Steve, Niagara Falls. The little note says, from Jess says, personal culture and purpose. Are you still there, Steve? You hanging in with us?
Yes, I'm here. I think some people develop a refined personal culture early in life, like with the Suzuki School of Violin. That's where 3-year-olds learn "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star." That's the first song that they learn on the violin. And I had been working in the mental health field a little bit, and I noticed that distracted, depressed, or delinquent people must begin their training. They probably begin their training later in life, and they need to take up training. And that, I think, starts with happy clapping and stomping to loud beat music. That's probably the first class that depressed people or distracted people need to take up. And I saw this on public TV in 05. It's even people in wheelchairs who couldn't walk would get up and they would start stomping, and then they would get up and start clapping. People who could not walk. That was this loud beat music that they were, you know, they're taking these classes with a loud beat music and happy clapping and stomping. And then I think the next step for people would be to join a glee club and to learn to sing in a group. And I think that people can develop a refined culture, a refined personal culture, if they take classes. And these classes are really not available in the mental health field, I don't believe.
You were thinking of when you say these classes, the kind of classes you've just been describing. Anything, Steve, that involves us in a group where we're encouraging each other and growing together and learning that we can do more than we thought we did, I think that's what all education should be. I think it's what all therapy should be. I think you're right on in emphasizing two things that involve relationships where people are doing things together. And I think it could be anything on the face of the earth. I think it could be, for me, it could be a bird watching class. Maybe when I was younger, it would have gotten me to watch birds sooner. I just think it's so important to realize that people help each other grow, and they help each other find their way in the world. And that took me a long time, because I came from a family where I didn't feel connected very much at all. And I thought I was doing everything pretty much on my own. There's an old saying, a self-made man is always an example of poor craftsmanship. And I had to be crafted more by my relationships with people. And that continues to this day. Does that make sense to you, Steve? And Pam, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I agree. It's such insight. You know, I'm feeling inspired. I mean, I know I'm on this radio show because we're trying to inspire other people, and then I'm the person on the show, but I'm getting inspired by the people calling in. And so I feel like all jazzed up and ready for another 8 hours of work after doing this.
Well, Pam, folks, is just about, like, I think you're certainly the only person I've met who has more energy than I do. I mean, it's very rare for me to be with somebody that doesn't wear out before me. Even now at this age, that's often true. Even with some of the young lawyers, they're collapsing, you know, at 8 o'clock, and I'm going to work till 2 a.m. before the trial starts. And I think that our energy comes from purpose. And it even does. When we were young, we must have thought we had purposes, even though we couldn't formulate them. And it's a good theme to come back to, is to look for those purposes. And if you think about what Steve was just talking about, there's just so many ways to join with people, to build strength, to build confidence, to do things together.
You say something all the time that I quote you like every day, just so you know. I don't think a day goes by that I don't quote you five times or more. But some of the things that you say that I think are so important is, I remember when you were talking one time and you talked about why humans have a big brain. And it wasn't, we had big brains before we had computers and books to read and all these complicated things, because we were born, or we developed, to have social relationships with one another and to have complicated feelings and interactions and all this sort of thing. And so the nature of humans is to want to be with one another. And one of the unfortunate things about feeling terrible, whatever that means, it means different things to different people, is there's a tendency to then back off and isolate, which is just, it makes everything worse. And so a continuing theme of what we've talked about today is that forward motion to just go be with people and do stuff with them. And people always feel better at the end, particularly if they've contributed something. And so we're designed to be social creatures. Isolating does not sit well with us. It makes everything worse. And so For people who are listening to this and feeling like, my gosh, I feel like I'm in a big black hole, go be with humans. And there are unlimited opportunities to do it and to be useful while you're with the humans. I thought what Sarah said was amazing. You can get online and find places to volunteer. We take volunteers and interns here. And they love coming in here because, first of all, we do meaningful work. They get to be part of it. They help us out a lot. They get a lot of free stuff and opportunities to come to our conferences and that kind of thing. And so I know the healing power of being with people. It just, you can't over promote this to people. And another thing that you said 5-6 years ago, and I've remembered it, and I tell people all the time, if you're lonely, you can fix that today. You just go find somebody who needs some help, find something to join, find some place to go, do something to be of service, and you won't be lonely while you're there. So people helping people is the key to life. It's part of what we're talking about with all this purpose.
Yeah, I was just, a dear friend of mine has actually been on the show, who is a classicist, and he, this is a major aside, but he, Michael Fontaine, he told the audience about, I have to have him back on, about how the conflict between psychiatry and deeper insights is part of the earliest plays we know of. And one of the very earliest ones is making fun of the Hippocrates-type medicine where the doctor cures the patient with medications of their craziness. And in the play, it turns out the doctor's crazy. And we're talking about hundreds of years before the birth of Christ. I mean, going way back. But I'm just reading Cicero because Michael sent me a book of Cicero's philosophy. And in it, he makes a big point of we would not have houses if we did not build them together, and we wouldn't have roads if we did not build them together, and we wouldn't have cities, and never think that you as a single individual are as responsible for everything around you as you think you are, because we humans, we do things together. And that's, you know, now that I think of it, that's more and more what I'm trying to do with this radio show. I'm really trying to build something together, Pam, and I'm enjoying it a lot more than I did for many, many years when I did it the easy way, which was just interviewing an interesting guest every week. And now I'm just putting much more of myself into it. People have told me they wanted more of me, and I'm bringing on fewer guests and people that I relate more to and that can relate to the audience, not just give information. Information you can read. I want to interact with folks, and I'm doing it more and more. I'm enjoying it more and more, and our listenership is going up. And it's all working out pretty good here, Pam. We're doing good.
Life is working out pretty good for you and I in general, and for so many other people. You know, people get, everything's such a mess. Medicine's a mess, and there are problems with so many things. But you just have to hang on to the things that are getting better and look at those as signs that things can continue to get better. And get up every day and do your best to make it better.
Principle of living. Absolutely. Pam, we're over. Hey,
I want to thank Steve for calling in,
and I want to thank Sarah. Oh, Sarah, bless you for your participation in the show and your continued flow of information to me. And Pam Popper, I love you. Wonderful to have you.
I love you too, and thank you so much for having me.
And my wonderful audience, thank you for being there. Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.